Court of Appeals. Have counsel for both the cases checked in? We have two cases on our docket. I noticed counsel are set up in our first case. Does any of you have any questions based on our written procedures? For those of you who have a sense of history, this may be the last oral argument in this room. And for those of you who are easily distracted, I'm told that the city is going to be testing its tornado sirens at 9:15, and whether the sound will penetrate here or not, I can't say. But on that basis, we are ready for oral argument in Bailey v. Airgas.
If it please the court, Kathy Gowdy, 28436, appearing for the plaintiff appellant, Bailey et al. The issue in this case and the issue on this appeal is whether the trial court failed to exercise discretion in permitting proper discovery to be conducted to present in opposition to the motion to summary judgment. It is interesting in this case that the summary judgment that was brought was actually on a procedural bar and not on the facts of the case itself. The workers' compensation barred the case from going forward. The Rule 56F request for further discovery was properly supported by an affidavit. Many of the cases that discuss failure or it's not an abuse of discretion to not grant 56F relief, in those cases there has not been an affidavit filed. It's interesting to see. The counsel say that their argument is sufficient or that their brief is sufficient. In this case, there was an affidavit filed. It was properly verified, and it stated with specificity what was needed to be discovered to file a proper opposition to the summary judgment motion, which was originally a 12B, but converts because it went beyond the facts of the case. I'm going to take it a little bit backwards here, because there was seemed to have been some confusion in the court, not this court, in the trial court, about the motion for reconsideration. The affidavits filed in support of the motion for reconsideration were specifically driven to answer the trial court's questions about what affidavits she wanted to see to determine Rule 56F.
Why couldn't those affidavits have been filed as part of the original opposition rather than waiting for a motion to reconsider?
Because the affidavit that was originally filed was filed by counsel. It determined that discovery was necessary. That's counsel's role. It laid out with specificity that no discovery had occurred in interrogatories. It was not anticipated that the trial court would go beyond that and request more. The reconsideration dealt with her question, with what she wanted to see, and answered that. It was a reconsideration of the Rule 56F.
Okay. Ms. Gowdy, I'm not sure that really answered Judge Webb's question. Why couldn't they have? They could have been filed with the original response. Instead of 56F, in addition to 56F, you could have filed these affidavits from the plaintiffs.
It could have been filed. Yes, yeah. It could have been. It's under the case law and under the Rule 56F language as whether or not they were necessary. But they were filed because the trial court said, I wanted to see these. They were not here. So a reconsideration was filed saying, here, this is more specifically what the discovery will go to. Does Airgas have unclean hands? Did they say you can't file workers' compensation and then bring in it as a bar? And that's why this is an interesting procedural issue, because it's not what the case was actually charged as or brought as. But again, the reconsideration, those affidavits were not substantive opposition to a summary judgment motion. They were to support what the court had said they wanted in an effort to do it. And procedural in this case, it's important to look at the length of time that went in this. The case was filed in, I believe, September of 07. The Rule 12B motion was filed, and then the case sat. And it was not until a new district judge got assigned the case, and then 2 months later, without oral argument, that the summary judgment was granted, but the Rule 56F was not. No discovery of any kind occurred during that about 13-month process. No initial disclosures, nothing, because the 202, there hadn't even been an answer filed by the defendants because of the pending Rule 12B. So there were no depositions, there were no admissions, there were none of the documents or discovery tools that can be attached to a summary judgment or an opposition that the rule anticipates being available. All we that was the pleadings.
Here's where I have trouble with your argument, to be perfectly honest with you. The summary judgment motion's based on workers' comp exclusivity. Your response to that is if the employer somehow misled the employees, intimidated them, and that's why they didn't file a comp claim, then the employer shouldn't be able to have it both ways and raise comp exclusivity. That's your position, correct?
Right.
Okay. Why wouldn't the employee plaintiffs have direct personal knowledge of what the employer did to mislead them, intimidate them, or otherwise prevent them from filing workers' comp claims so they could have put in affidavits on that point, raising a disputed factual issue without any need for discovery from the employer? That would seem to be something that would be within their direct personal knowledge.
It would be I don't want to go outside of the record in this, but the complaint specifically asserted that one of the issues in the factual base of the actual complaint, the mold, affected the memory of the plaintiffs. It affected their ability to cope. It affected their perspective around that. But it also was not required. And a Rule 56 affidavit does not have to state the evidence.
Okay, wouldn't the trial court have been within its discretion in denying Rule 56F relief if it was apparent to the trial court from the nature of the case that the information necessary to oppose the summary judgment was within the plaintiff's personal knowledge as opposed to something that could only be gleaned from the defendant through formal discovery?
And your question is, would the trial court have been within their discretion to do so?
Yes.
The response is no, because that's what happened here. That is what the trial court did. They said it was within the grasp of the plaintiffs, and they should have filed this affidavit. I believe she listed three specific claims in her order that wanted affidavits upon.
Well, okay. Why was the trial court wrong in concluding that the plaintiffs would have had direct personal knowledge of this interference with their comp claim, and therefore they didn't need discovery?
Because it's an assumption. Because it is an assumption that is outside the facts. It requires evidence. It requires the discovery. It's an assumption that the plaintiffs knew about workers' compensation.
You don't need discovery to establish what your clients already know.
You may need discovery to establish whether or not your clients were informed of what they should have known. Did they know about their workers' comp? Did they know? It's an assumption that goes outside the record and outside the evidence.
Okay, thank you.
There.
Well, let me ask you, though, following up on that, 56F says your affidavit, your counsel's affidavit,
yes,
has to state facts about why the parties or the plaintiffs cannot, by affidavit, present facts essential to justify its opposition. I read the affidavit of counsel and it seemed very conclusory. I don't think there was any facts in there about why you couldn't establish facts relevant to exclusivity or what your clients knew or didn't know or were told or not told. I saw nothing in that affidavit that stated anything but a conclusion.
The affidavit went beyond a conclusion. The cases that use the conclusory language generally state, counsel states, I need discovery. This specifically stated what the issue was that discovery would be aimed for. It was on a relevant fact, whether or not there were dirty hands that would go outside of the workers' compensation bar, whether or not they were prevented. So there it goes to the relevant fact. It's not mere conclusion on that. And it states that depositions and discovery are required to inquire about that, disclosures. We don't know what are in those files. It goes beyond, and there is no case law that requires that those affidavits need to be evidentiary in nature. It needs to put the court, it needs to put the other side on notice of what will be done with this Rule 56F.
But it needs to say we cannot present the facts necessary, and I don't think that could have been said because you went on in the motion reconsider to present facts that I think your position would be the facts stated by the plaintiff's affidavit would be sufficient to avoid summary judgment, wouldn't they? I mean, you could have presented those facts. So I don't know how an affidavit of counsel could have fairly and accurately said you can't present facts because you went on later to present the facts without discovery.
The affidavits presented by the plaintiff, I believe, would be insufficient to oppose summary judgment because we didn't have adequate facts. They were affidavits stating what the people believed or what they heard. I note that they were not all of the Airgas plaintiffs that did it because of the memory issues. But they were not oppositions to a summary judgment because we didn't have sufficient facts in our possession to present such things in good faith to a court to oppose summary judgment. Discovery was needed.
Don't you think in hindsight you would have made a stronger case if you presented the affidavits of the plaintiffs that you could, and then you had an affidavit counsel saying there are memory loss problems, there are other reasons, and for all these reasons, either deny summary judgment or alternatively continue it under 56F?
In hindsight, yes. In hindsight, perhaps, but the case law did not mandate that of counsel. The case law did not say file all of this. There has not been a requirement to be presenting your evidentiary opposition saying this isn't enough to oppose summary judgment until the judge made this ruling, in which case then we addressed what the judge's ruling was and what she wanted to see further. That's the difference, is that under the case law and under the rule itself, it was that the affidavit was more than adequate. It was sufficient. It put on notice. It met all of the points that are required for a Rule 56F affidavit. On materiality, I believe I've addressed that as to the relevance. I think I will reserve my remaining time then for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Jonathan Bender and I represent Appalese in this matter, bar number 33979. The rules are clear when a non-movement needs to show in order to withstand a motion for summary judgment, in order to oppose a motion for summary judgment. And the law is also clear what the requesting party has to do in order to satisfy the requirements of Rule 56F. It's worth reviewing here briefly what the Bailey plaintiffs didn't do in the district court proceedings below. They didn't correctly comply with the requirements of 56F. I'll get into that in a moment. They didn't file a substantive response to a motion to dismiss that was properly converted to a motion for summary judgment. They didn't present, as Judge Webb and Judge Connolly have both identified, they didn't present client affidavits when that motion to dismiss was initially pending. And they didn't ask for any extension of time or contemplate in any manner if that 56F request for additional discovery would have been denied by the district court. And the 56F standard is discretionary. So with no substantive response to 56F, with no substantive response to the pending motion and no 56F request that properly complied with the rule, the district court ruled on the information that it had in front of it. It properly converted the motion to a motion for summary judgment and granted it. And because there was no mistake in the original order, it properly denied that motion for reconsideration. I'd like to start with the three issues that we believe were preserved for appeal. And the record, in our opinion, is a little bit unclear about what precisely was preserved and what wasn't. So time permitting, I'd like to start with the issues that have been preserved and then address the issues that have not been preserved for appeal. The first goes to the heart of what Ms. Gowdy was talking about. Was counsel's affidavit sufficient for Rule 56F purposes? The second is whether the district court erred in denying that motion for reconsideration. And the third is whether the district court properly disregarded those five client affidavits after granting summary judgment. So turning to the first issue then, was counsel's affidavit sufficient under Rule 56F? Now the rule, again, and I'm paraphrasing, but it says that if the party can't present facts that are essential to justify the opposition. And one of the two keywords there, facts is one, and essential is another. And if that's the case, if the party can't present facts essential to justify the opposition, then the court may deny summary judgment, may allow discovery, or may enter another order as is just. There's nothing in that rule that says the district court has to allow discovery. And there's no abuse of discovery to deny 56F if the requesting party can't show or fails to show that the proposed discovery is necessary and could produce facts necessary to oppose summary judgment. Now, the Tenth Circuit has further comment on the requirements of the federal corollary, which is virtually identical to our state court rule. And the Tenth Circuit has said that a requesting party also has to identify the specific steps that were taken in order to identify and obtain those necessary facts. So that counsel affidavit that was filed in conjunction with the response on the motion to dismiss simply doesn't pass muster under the language of the rule and the cases that apply the rule. The discovery sought was not essential to justify the opposition. They sought discovery to determine to what extent plaintiffs may have had their rights adversely affected or impacted. And as the court has already recognized, it's certainly our position that that information would have been within the possession of those plaintiffs at the time the motion to dismiss was pending. About who applied, who did they talk to at Airgas? What did Airgas say? Did they go and see physicians? Were they granted benefits? Were they denied benefits? All those kinds of things could have formed the basis of a substantive opposition to the motion for summary judgment. There's no explanation. There's no credible explanation.
Let me ask you this, if I could. Do you concede that the affidavits belatedly produced on reconsideration motion were sufficient to raise an issue of fact as to your client's right to rely on workers' comp exclusivity?
I don't necessarily concede that point. I think that some of the allegations in those affidavits are a little bit thin. I think that those affidavits form the basis to support a substantive opposition, but I'm not willing to concede at this point that those affidavits would have necessarily led the court to deny the pending motion.
In its ruling on the motion to reconsider, the trial court assumed, but without citing any authority, that unclean hands or judicial estoppel could preclude an employer from raising exclusivity. I have a two-part question. First, do you dispute that legal principle? And second, if you dispute it, do you think that's properly something we should address in our decision, or is the only question here the various iterations of the 56F procedural issue?
Thank you, Your Honor. I would agree with that legal principle that unclean hands would in all likelihood preclude a moving party like Airgas from raising an exclusivity defense. I don't think that issue is properly before the court. I think the issue is really the whether or not the requirements of Rule 56F were met in this instance, and it's our position, of course, that they were not.
And if they're not met, if we agreed with you that they were not met, the affidavit was insufficient to require a continuance or any other 56F relief, do you think the court, can we review for abuse of discretion the court's decision not to allow a substantive response? Or how do you view the procedure of if a court, all they do is in this case 56F is insufficient, at that point, does the court have unfettered authority to enter summary judgment, or is there some discretion, or how do we deal with that issue?
Well, I believe, and I think it's cited in our brief, that the standard of review is abuse of discretion here. There are cases in which, and we've cited cases in our brief, too, that come to mind. They're both out of the Tenth Circuit. One is the Estate of Ricci case. It's an unpublished disposition. But under Tenth Circuit rules, it can be relied on as, for persuasive authority. The other is Committee for the First Amendment. And in both of those cases, the procedural posture is somewhat similar to this case. In the Estate of Ricci case, the party moves for summary judgment. The non-moving party requests 56F relief. The court denies 56F and grants summary judgment and doesn't allow any additional substantive, any additional substantive response. It's actually, it's a little bit more pronounced in that in the published case, the Committee for the First Amendment case. In that case, the non-moving party, i.e. the party that's requesting 56F discovery, actually flags for the court and says, court, if you're inclined to rule against us on summary judgment, we'd like additional time to put together additional affidavits and try and inject a fact issue. And in that case, the district court declined to follow that proposed procedure by the non-moving party, denied the 56F request, granted summary judgment, and on appeal, the Tenth Circuit held that that was not an abuse of discretion.
Do you think it's implicit in that case, though, that such a decision can be challenged for abuse of discretion?
I do. I don't think that in this instance there was anything particularly unfair or unreasonable about the result. All the information was within their possession at the time, and for whatever reason, and to use their language, they took a gamble. They rolled the dice when they didn't substantively respond to summary judgment, and when they filed a very conclusory and vague affidavit that didn't present any facts. That affidavit was premised on inquiry and investigation. And I'm talking about the counsel affidavit, and it says that some or all of the plaintiffs may have had their rights adversely affected. It's hypothetical, it's vague, it's conclusory, it just doesn't comply with the spirit or the plain language of Rule 56F or the cases that apply that rule.
So that argument goes to the insufficiency of the 56F affidavit. And let me ask you again, if we can agree with you that it's insufficient and we therefore review for abuse of discretion the court's decision to just enter summary judgment outright rather than to direct a substantive response, how does it factor into the analysis of discretion that this initially was a 12B motion that was converted into 56 by the court? And second, it's at the very threshold, although several months into the case, at the very threshold of even before any responsive pleading was filed to the complaint. So it's really a threshold step. Wouldn't that counsel in favor of saying maybe I'm being a little precipitous in entering summary judgment at this threshold stage?
Well, I don't think so. I don't think there's anything in Rule 56 that precludes a court from dispensing with issues early in the case. It's a procedural mechanism to get rid of claims that shouldn't be litigated. And in this instance, we carried our burden. We established that there were no material facts in dispute. The burden shifted to the Bailey plaintiffs. They didn't satisfy their burden. They had information in their possession that they could have presumably presented to the court, and for whatever reason elected not to. So I don't think that 56, I don't think it would be an abuse of discretion. I don't think it was an abuse of discretion for the district court in this instance to simply deny the 56F and grant our motion.
Can I ask one follow-up question? I know it's converted and I didn't read your motion, but did you say move under 12B or alternatively 56, or did you just say 12B?
I believe we said 12B.
And so the court on its own converted it to a 56.
Well, it was actually at the request, it was at the prompting of the Bailey plaintiffs. The Bailey plaintiff was one of the few points that they raised in the opposition to the motion to dismiss was, court, you're going to be considering information outside of the pleadings, because in our motion we attached an affidavit from an employee at Airgas to support our position that we had complied with the requirements of the workers' compensation statute. So it was really at the prompting of the Bailey plaintiffs that the court converted the motion from a motion to dismiss to a 56.
But the court would have been, it was discretion, I guess, than to say, it's a 12B motion, I'm going to disregard your affidavit, and therefore I'm going to address it under 12B, and under 12B I just can't deny it, file a responsive answer at that point.
I believe that's true, Your Honor. I think that the court could have done that at the time, but at the request or urging an argument of the non-moving party, it seems to make perfect sense, and it was appropriate to go ahead and convert the motion to a 56F. Motion.
I mean, do you dispute that the question is properly before us, properly preserved, that the trial court may have abused its discretion in collapsing the 56F ruling into the merits? Now, I realize you say there was no abuse of discretion, but you agree that we can consider that issue on this record?
I do, although respectfully, I would cast that issue a little bit differently. I do agree that there are two orders. There's an order granting summary judgment in favor of Eric Ass, and then there was the subsequent order denying the Bailey plaintiff's motion for reconsideration. But with respect to that first order that we're talking about right now, I think that there were two determinations
in
that first order.
The same order, no 56F relief, and summary judgment granted. Do you agree that we may consider on this record whether the trial court abused its discretion in jumping right through 56F and granting summary judgment?
Well, I don't agree that, maybe we're splitting hairs here, I don't agree that the court just moved right through 56F. I think, there are about 8 paragraphs or so in that order that address the 56F standard and why counsel's affidavit is insufficient. So
that wasn't the implication of my question.
Okay.
Do you agree that we may consider whether the trial court abused its discretion in granting summary judgment after it denied 56F without affording the plaintiffs a separate opportunity to respond on the merits?
I do agree that the court may consider that issue. I'd like to, again, highlight the fact that that Bailey never asked for additional time to respond in the event that the 56F was denied. There's no contemplation in Bailey's papers anywhere in this case that 56F is a discretionary standard. It was solely when the court grants us discovery, go ahead and postpone ruling on summary judgment until we're able to pursue the discovery that we think is necessary. And for reasons I've already articulated, it wasn't. That was not essential discovery for purposes of opposing our motion.
Okay.
I'd like to shoot ahead, if I may, to address, I have 30 seconds left. If there are no other questions from the court, I think I've used my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Defendant's counsel has put a bunch of additional burdens in what that affidavit should have contained and what that motion that are not contained in the rules. It is clear under the Committee of First Amendment case, the U.S. Supreme Court case cited by both sides, that the affidavit does not need to contain evidence. It's not a substantive opposition. It's to put the court on notice of what discovery is needed. In every case cited by the defendant in support of their proposition, with the exception of 2, discovery had occurred. Discovery had occurred in some that it was almost pre-trial. There have been disclosures. There have been depositions. In only 2 cases, and that would be the KeyBank case and the Stokes v. Denver News case, there hadn't been any discovery conducted when the Rule 56F was requested and when the summary judgment was granted. In the Stokes case, which seems to be the one more primarily used, there was no affidavit filed with the Rule 56F, so Rule 56F didn't come to fruition. It was not properly invoked. That affidavit has to be filed. That is not the case here. In the Casebolt case, they went in and looked at the dispute of facts. The affidavit, they believed, was also part of a substantive response. I believe I have that right. I'm not sure I can read my handwriting correctly, and I apologize. In the Estate of Ritchie case, the summary judgment motion was also based on answers to interrogatories, to depositions that had incurred. There had been discovery. What they found in that case is based on the discovery that occurred, there is no defamation available in 1983, and that the facts themselves did not create a material fact.
Let me talk about factual disputes for just a second. Workers' comp exclusivity requires the existence of an employer-employee relationship and a nexus between the nature and course of employment and the injuries. Do you suggest that there is a factual dispute as to either of those?
As to the employer-employee and the nexus?
Yes.
No.
Thank you.
On that. What I am disputing is that the affidavit was conclusory. The affidavit stated what the inquiry was. The assumption of conclusory appears to be stating that an officer of the court, he presented a dilatory or unsubstantiated verified affidavit. There's no evidence of that. It stated that they'd made investigation and that more discovery was needed, and this statement is made as an officer court, and it stated what that discovery was going to be. It stated what the that there had been an investigation. It didn't just say we're just standing out here saying, let's just get those files. It didn't say exclusively that it's in the hands of the other side. It was sufficient under the case law and under Rule 56F to have a continuation granted to get the discovery that counsel, in its discretion, determined essential to provide a substantive opposition. If we had presented unverified affidavits that we could not verify in fact of the clients, that would be wrong. That would be a fraud. The effort was to get discovery to accurately and properly oppose summary judgment. Thank you.
We appreciate the arguments of both counsel. The case stands submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course. Counsel are excused. When the tables are cleared, counsel may set up immediately for our next case.